It's time once again for Dialogue Conspiracy with political research specialist Mae Brussel, who for 5 years has shared with us her extensive research into political assassinations and abuses of power in this country. Her program relates the news of the week to emerging evidence about the conspiracy which allegedly maintains by force its control over the legislative, executive, and judicial processes in America. And now, Mae Brussel.
Good afternoon. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. It's Dialogue Conspiracy number 275, and it's June the 27th, 1977. It was just 5 years ago this month that I was writing my article on the Watergate, my first published article after 8 years' research into political assassinations and conspiracies. The article was a three-part article for The Realist titled, Why Was Martha Mitchell Kidnapped? The American Assassins, and How Richard Nixon Really Got to Power. Watergate defendants were arrested 8 days earlier, and beginning the next day, I started this three-part article. And as I say, it's just the anniversary of that time period where I was frantically writing. I completed the entire article by June the 11th, 1972, and I just went from my bedroom to my study and got that information out. And I'm proud of what I did at the time, and had a press conference in Los Angeles in 1972, in August 1972, on the Watergate scandal. I had been doing Dialogue Conspiracy for 1 year, from 1971, May of 71, up till 72, at the time of the Watergate, for 1 year. I had been on the air for 1 year when I went out and published my first article, and we disseminated that to members of Congress and people all over the United States, and, of course, overseas, as many as we could get out. This past week, after a five-year anniversary of publishing my first printed article, I broke into another media, which was exciting, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about it. I went to Hollywood to make my first movie. Of course, it was Mae Brussel playing Mae Brussel. It's a large production starring Hope Holliday, Broderick Crawford, and there's one other actor, a well-known actor, but I'm not too much up on the Hollywood. I don't see too many pictures. The movie is titled The Howard Hughes Mystery, and it'll be ready for distribution within a month. I believe that all of it, I saw the entire movie before I made the cuts into it, and all of it is ready except for the inserts of Mae Brussel. I'll tell you how the movie opens. I won't tell you the inserts or the ending. It's a very interesting film. It asks a lot of questions. The producer is from Guatemala. He's made 22 films overseas and has an overseas distribution company, and now is making a lot of productions in Hollywood. And he wanted me to introduce myself into the film, to open the movie, and then it goes along with the Howard Hughes mystery, the story of the Hughes disappearance, and many questions that are not dared to be asked by the major media, and that people keep from asking, even though they do in conversation. As I say, the major media never covers these kind of questions when they make movies on Howard Hughes or anybody else. They don't interject these intelligent questions. I think they're intelligent and necessary. But this producer allowed me to do it. So I opened up the movie, and then I ended the movie, and there were five inserts. And after viewing the filming, I was able to sit with him, and he told me where he wanted the cuts and asked me to provide documents or information to insert into those areas. And then it goes back to the action, and then there's a break, another insert, and then it ends with my voice and some more comments about the Howard Hughes mystery. And at the end, it says the end with a question mark. And we will be making a second movie. I've worked on a book all this last year, and we'll be going into another movie and a book on the Howard Hughes mystery. The way the movie begins, I say to the audience, my name is Mae Brussel. For the past 14 years, I have investigated political assassinations and conspiracies in the United States. The sources of my information have been witness testimony, government documents, congressional hearings, National Archives documents, published books, magazine articles, newsletters. And I continue to say that my library of over 800 books is probably the best private library on conspiracies and assassinations in the country. I explained to them that I've been on Dialogue Conspiracy in Carmel, California for 5.5 years, a weekly radio program which I consider the most honest and the most provocative in the entire free world. I then showed them my file from the FBI, from the Freedom of Information Act, which I'll share more with you later on the radio today, and showed them the documents that I have been under surveillance of the federal government and the FBI since 1966, since September 1966, 2 months before Lyndon Johnson ordered that all the researchers be under surveillance. My surveillance date began in September the 12th, 1966. By September of 1967, the federal government had to immediately handle me in a different matter and disseminate information to the General Investigative Division. And I showed them my FBI documents, which I received from the Justice Department, and I'll read some of that to you. That was in the movie. And then I continued, I have been invited to interrupt this filming from time to time to give you some facts and information on the Howard Hughes mystery. And then the movie begins. It's an interesting format because it is a story about a mystery man, and then there are the interjections of fact to separate or to blend in with the fiction and give it a reality. I think that this producer has a lot of courage. I really appreciate the opportunity to make the movie and to work with him again. It's the same kind of courage that KLRB had when they allowed me to begin the broadcast and be on every week naming all these sources of mischief and assassinations and conspiracies, continuously naming people and fingering them and being given the privilege to say it on the air. I've really been very lucky to work with such people, and I was lucky to work with Paul Krasner, who published 3 Dynamite articles for which he paid his dues and had trouble publishing and was blacklisted from many book publishers and magazine companies for a long time. I'm happy to say that Paul's energy and opportunities are now picking up, and he's getting assignments and being able to get back into the media that he had before, because he was very isolated after my Watergate stories, and the one that he published, the Senate Select Committee, is part of the cover-up, and the SLA is the CIA. Paul was under just as much, if not more, surveillance than me because he was the medium by which this got out to the people. I saw Paul this morning on the way home from Sacramento. I was up there last night with Travis T. Hip doing a radio show up in Sacramento, Dialogue Conspiracy, live. We took calls on the air, and I saw Paul this morning. There are a few people like Travis up at KZAP, Paul Krasner, and some friends I stayed with in Sacramento last night who lived in Carmel when I had my very first program on Dialogue Conspiracy in 1971. I've maintained some of these friends throughout the country that have followed my research, been there on these very important days, been at my press conference when I broke the Watergate story in Los Angeles. One of the persons who attended that press conference and tape recorded it just wrote and composed a new play called Metamorphosis in Los Angeles, and I saw his play there, and it's fantastic. These friends are finally beginning to do well and pick up their means of getting their message across in their form. So these last 5.5 years of being in public life have been very rewarding and have been very exciting because it's been a struggle which is tedious in a sense, but I do it because I like it. And it's probably been as rewarding as any occupation or hobby anybody could have because you meet occasionally, not often, people that believe in you and take a stand and stand up. And the producer of this movie in Hollywood just did that. He met me. He wanted my material. He believed in me, and he has $1.5 million production, and he interjected this kind of truth, and it was fun working down there. The cameraman, the sound men, and these people were just fascinated with the material and want copies of Dialogue Conspiracy to mass produce down there, and they were really interested in it. So I made a lot of contacts, and I will be working in Hollywood. And the thing that's so wonderful about it is that just this week I received several documents of the way the federal government tried to suppress me, tried to hamper my research from 1966. I have the FBI reports, a few of the reports of surveillance dating back as early as 66 up to the time of the death threat of Sandra Good of the Manson family, which is included. And then I have the CIA files, document number 1035.960, supplied to me by Ted Gandolfo in New York City, who got them from Harold Weisberg out of the CIA. And I have before me to share with you, in as much time as we have, the way the FBI and the CIA tried to stop the researchers and me by the FBI, my own personal files, how since 66 they've tried to shut me up and follow me and harass me, and I intend to really sue them because I've had enough information before to place a suit, but now I really have the ammunition. And the federal government, the CIA, had a concerted effort to stop, and yet there are quite a number of movie producers in L.A. that are ready to fight back. We don't have the McCarthy era, the blacklisting era, and they want to get these stories out. I've been invited to go to Mexico this winter to work on movie scripts on the research that I've done. I don't want to spend the whole winter in Mexico. I want to be on Dialogue Conspiracy in Carmel here, and I want to write in my own home. I'll go down for a week, but there are any number of opportunities opening up. And as I say, it wasn't easy to get the truth to the American people, and it still isn't completely out, but it's a starting point when you get a motion picture that is going to every country in the world, 200 theaters in Japan and over in Europe and Central and South America and all over the world. The Hughes mystery will be going there, and in the United States, we're really on our way to getting some of the facts out. I did show on the movie a document from the FBI dated September the 18th, 1967, and it was written after I had gone to New Orleans to see District Attorney Jim Garrison. I started my research when John Kennedy was killed in 1963, and 4 years later, Jim Garrison had arrested a man named Clay Shaw, who he accused of being part of the conspiracy to kill John Kennedy. And as a researcher, enjoying my constitutional rights and liberties in the United States of America, I took an airplane to New Orleans to see what evidence Jim Garrison had regarding the assassination of John Kennedy. That's an innocent enough project. I wasn't funded by anybody. In fact, Jim Garrison wanted to pay me for the trip, and I did out of my own money, foolishly, maybe not, said this is my contribution to my country, or what I think is the necessity for the country to know the truth, and I paid for it out of my own savings. Well, the FBI report reads like this. Due to the fact that Mrs. Prussell has been in contact with James Garrison in New Orleans and has made public comments concerning the assassination investigation, the FBI Dallas and San Francisco offices are to immediately incorporate the information received concerning her into an appropriate letterhead memorandum suitable for dissemination in both to the Department of the FBI and the United States Secret Service. I became a danger to the president, I suppose, because I went out to find out who killed the other president. It went on, copies of the memorandum are to be furnished to the New Orleans office for dissemination to the U.S. Secret Service locally in San Francisco and the U.S. Secret Service in Dallas and in New Orleans, and they were to receive the appropriate copies. This matter is to be handled immediately. I was a very dangerous threat. They hurriedly have to do it because I saw Jim Garrison. And replies are to be marked for the attention of the General Investigative Division. Now, they went on that there was a bomb threat on the Delta Airlines plane, Flight 827, when I left New Orleans, which was true, which landed in Dallas. And they searched the aircraft and didn't find a bomb, but they mentioned in the memo that the bomb threat came from Atlanta, Georgia, which I never knew, so therefore they knew who had grounded the plane. It goes on and implies that in the documents, but it goes on to say, San Francisco FBI determined that Mrs. Brussel, in the past, has expressed great alarm over the fact of the United States becoming fascist. She supports Mark Lane's book, Rush to Judgment, and she takes the view that Lee Harvey Oswald was not a communist. Now, the Warren Report said he wasn't a communist, but this is very important, the FBI, that I think he's not a communist. And you read the Warren Report, they said he wasn't. They said 10 years ago, this fall, she pictures America as controlled by conspirators in the government, which view she has stated publicly. And due to her thinking that she has expressed publicly, the FBI in Dallas and San Francisco have to incorporate their information into memorandum and disseminate it in the United States, in the FBI, and the U.S. Secret Service. Because I stated publicly that Oswald, Lee Harvey Oswald, was not a communist, and because I stated publicly that I thought America was becoming fascist, I then became under surveillance of the federal government. There are other documents here that have the naming of my how many children I had at home, my father's place of occupation, their home address, my home address in Los Angeles before I moved to Carmel, my Carmel address, my telephone numbers, and they checked with the drivers the record, my driving record. They couldn't find anything. They checked with the credit bureau. They couldn't find anything. They give sources of investigation, my voting record, where I was registered. And there's a lot of details of information and questions that they have been on my tail since 1966. Now, an interesting thing happened in this with this packet of correspondence that I want to share with you. When I went down to Los Angeles to make the movie, I was leaving this last Thursday, and I was bringing down with me the correspondence of FBI Director Clarence Kelly, in which I asked him for the name of the FBI man who took the fingerprints off of Howard Hughes' body in Houston, Texas, and who was with them when the lift was taken, who in Washington, D.C., and the FBI received Howard Hughes' fingerprints, and who verified that they were Howard Hughes' prints, and what did they document they took that from. And Clarence Kelly wrote back to me, the director of the FBI, and said that he couldn't provide me with this information. So I sent him another letter, and I said, that isn't good enough. I want more details. I'm a researcher, and there's certain FBI men, such as James Hostey, involved in the Kennedy assassination, whose names will go down in history. And I think that the FBI is not the CIA, and Jack Anderson was on national television saying that Clarence Kelly had fingerprinted them himself, and he said they absolutely were Howard Hughes' fingerprints because the Internal Revenue had gone down immediately and sent agents. So all I asked for, the name of the man who took the fingerprints, and I got a letter from Clarence Kelly saying, in response to your letter regarding the fingerprint identification of Howard Hughes, this is to advise you that all information we could provide you was contained in my letter of April 21st, which was nothing. He said, I regret we are unable to be of further assistance in this matter. And it was signed Clarence Kelly. Well, I wanted to use this in the Hughes mystery to show that the federal government still is holding back information on all the assassinations and conspiracies. And I went to my file Monday night after I left KLRB to pull out my letters from Clarence Kelly and my letters from Attorney General John Hill in Houston, Texas, regarding the identification of that body that's supposed to be Howard Hughes down in Houston, Texas. I went immediately to where they were, and they weren't in my files. And I knew then they would never be there because I had been making arrangements to make the movie since last March. And they were there up to recent time, and all I had to do was pull the files out and leave. I spent all day Tuesday going through at least 1,000 or 2,000 files on Howard Hughes, went through every file, and couldn't find these letters. So I called the FBI office in Monterey, California, and talked to Mr. Cummings, and I said, I know that when you ask somebody, did you burglarize a home, they're never going to say yes. It's like a child in the cookie jar. But I said, I read last week that the Attorney General, Griffin Bell, has said that he can't guarantee that the FBI are not still doing black bag burglary jobs. So I called Mr. Cummings, Aguacita here in Monterey, the FBI agent, and said, did you come to my house and remove the correspondence I had with Clarence Kelly? Because I need it tomorrow to go to Hollywood to use it in a movie on Howard Hughes. And he didn't, instead of saying, of course we didn't, or get off it, May, or don't be so paranoid, or I'm sure you'll find it, the FBI agent in our city said, I'm not going to tell you. I said, can you tell me at least categorically that the Justice Department has ordered no more black bag burglary jobs in homes? He said, I'm not going to tell you that. And he would not confirm that they're not supposed to burglarize the homes on the Monterey Peninsula or anywhere else. So I called the Attorney General at 10 o'clock Wednesday morning and asked for Griffin Bell's secretary and said that my home had documents that I needed that were important for a movie that I would take to Los Angeles, and it was a correspondence with Clarence Kelly regarding fingerprints of Howard Hughes and the Attorney General in Texas. This was at 10 in the morning. At 12 o'clock that same day in my mailbox, through the Justice Department, according to the Freedom of Information Act, came the letters, duplicates of the letters of the FBI Director Clarence Kelly and my correspondence on the Howard Hughes case. Now, what happened was that I believe the back door of my house could possibly have been burglarized of documents that were pertinent to the movie I was going to make the next day in Los Angeles. But I had written for the Freedom of Information Act for information they had in their files about me. And 2 hours later from Washington, D.C., was the correspondence of Clarence Kelly. The only thing it didn't have on it was his actual signature, which I wanted for my collection, because someday I want to publish letters with the original documents that were sent to me. I want to do a book on my correspondence of this 14 years research. So that one document that was mailed to me from Mr. Kelly had a stamp on it with C.M. Kelly, and the other was stamped C.M. Kelly, and both letters did not have his personal signature, and the one that came to me to my home had the original signature. So the point is that the black bag jobs and the surveillance is still going on. It started in 66, according to my FBI files, and it's still going on. And not only is the CIA doing it, but I want to read you now from the FBI doing it. I want to read you now the CIA documents that were sent to me for Ted Gandolfo. We don't have time for all of them, but this is a sample of what people who questioned the Warren Report were getting in 1966. This is when the government formed a method of operation to put down any person who criticized the Warren Report. And this is, it's under titled under psychology. It's from the CIA, and it was disseminated to different agents to be sent around the United States. Number one point, this, our concern, CIA. And keep in mind, the CIA is not supposed to be operating legally in the United States at all. It's against their charter. They're not supposed to be doing it, and yet they control the news media and the book publishers, the newspapers, and this is the way they handle it. Number one, our concern. From the day of President Kennedy's assassination on, there is speculation of the responsibility for his murder. Although this was stemmed for a time by the Warren Commission report, which incidentally was written to put doubts to rest, various writers have now had time to scan the commission's published report and documents for new pretexts and questioning. And there has been a new wave of books and articles criticizing the Warren Commission's findings. In most cases, the critics have speculated as to the existence of some kind of a conspiracy. And often they even implied that the Warren Commission itself was involved. And presumably, as a result of that increasing challenge to the Warren Commission report, a public opinion poll recently indicated that only 46% of the American public do not think that Oswald acted alone, while more than half of those polled thought that the Warren Commission left some questions unresolved, and doubtless these polls will go abroad and show a similar or more adverse results. Point two. This trend of opinion is a matter of concern to the U.S. government, including our organization. This is the CIA sending a psychological memo on how to put down the critics. The members of the Warren Commission were chosen for their integrity, their experience, and their prominence. They represented both major parties, and their staff were deliberately drawn from all sections of the country. You could refute that in 1 second. Because of the standing of the commissioners and the effort to impugn their rectitude and wisdom or to cast doubt on the whole leadership of the American society. Moreover, there's an even a tendency to hint that President Johnson himself is the one person who may have benefited in some way in the assassination. Innuendo of such seriousness affects not only the individual concerned, but the whole reputation of the American government. Our organization, the CIA itself, is directly involved. We contributed information to the investigation. Conspiracy theories have frequently thrown suspicion on our CIA, for example, by falsely alleging that Lee Harvey Oswald worked for us. The aim of this dispatch is to provide material for you to counter and discredit these claims of the conspiracy theorists, to inhibit the circulation of such claims, that means to curtail honest research, in other countries. Number three, action. We don't recommend that you discuss the assassination or initiate it unless it's already placed. But when discussion is active, however, This is the way you should answer it. To discuss the publicity problem with liaison and friendly elite contacts, politicians and editors of newspapers or books. And you point out, this is CIA agents, that the Warren Commission made a thorough investigation as humanly possible, that the charges of the critics have are without serious foundation, and further speculative discussion plays into the hands of the opposition. Point out also that parts of the conspiracy talk are deliberately generated by communist propagandists. Urge them to discourage these unfounded and irresponsible speculations. In other words, they were to go to politicians and editors of books or magazines or newspapers and discourage this irresponsible speculation. Two, employ propaganda assets to answer and refute the attacks. Use book reviews and feature articles as particularly appropriate for this purpose. The unclassified attachment to this guidance will provide useful background material. In this point about putting researchers down and using letters to the editor, in 1966, I wrote a letter to the editor defending Mark Lane's book. The Monterey Herald published a book review that was totally without foundation against the book Rush to Judgment that Mark Lane wrote. In fact, I even called the party who wrote the book review and asked him if he read the book or if he was taking it from somebody who wrote the script for him, because the review was happening all over the country with the same words. So I wrote to the Monterey Herald in September of 1966 expressing my opinion on the Kennedy killing and facts that supported Mark Lane's book, and that's when the FBI began their file on me, because I wrote a letter to the editor to a paper in Monterey, California, the Monterey Herald, on the killing of Kennedy. And then later I talked to the JCs one evening, and there were agents in the audience that also turned in a report of what I said and had this in the paper. This goes into my FBI file. So when they said that they would handle book reviews or feature articles and put down these conspiracy books, they had an attack ready by 1966, and they were using it. Our play should point out that the critics of the Warren Report are, one, wedded to theories before the evidence was in, two, that they're politically interested, three, that they're financially interested, and four, they're infatuated with their own theories. Of course, none of this hardly could apply to me, because I wasn't wedded to a theory before the evidence came in. I spent 8 years going through everything that had been published by the government, every document and exhibit and witness testimony, before I wrote one article. Two, I wasn't running for any political office, and I'm still not, and I have no body of people around me, and I push no political party. And three, I made no financial gain, and up to this point, maybe with the movies, I'll get out of debt. I've invested my own thousands of dollars and never made a cent that didn't go back into the books and research, and no luxuries at that. And so their arguments were to put people down for making money on it, running for office, or not studying the evidence, and none of this could be applied when then I was under surveillance. The CIA said, in the course of discussing the whole phenomena of criticizing the Warren Report, a useful strategy would be to single out Edward Epstein's book for attack, for example, and take Mark Lane's book, although they acknowledge it would be more difficult to answer it as a whole. Fourth point of attack, in private or in media discussions not directed at any particular writer or attacking the publications, just in general, getting the researchers in general. This is the way you should talk about the critics in general of the Warren Commission. A, that they have no significant new evidence that has emerged with which the commission didn't consider. The New York Times was using this attack on the front page against the Congressional Committee, the Select Committee in Washington that was just formed in March of 1977. They were already, by June 77, headlining it that committee has no new evidence. This goes back 10 years earlier. No significant new evidence emerged from the commission. It said the assassination of John Kennedy and the investigation is now being compared with the Dreyfus case, and they agreed that they'd have a problem on their hands, or a better parallel would be the Reichstag fire of 1933, now believed was set by van der Lubbe by his own initiative, that neither Nazis or communists, but the Nazis tried to put the blame on the communists. The latter would have been more successful if they convinced the world that the Nazis were to blame. They said that the people doing the research into the assassination of John Kennedy, who looked at the cover-up of the Warren Commission hearings and the Warren Report, were doing a job such as Emile Zola did in the Dreyfus case or finding the facts in the Reichstag fire, that the history wasn't, as the French government said or the German government said, but had been falsified, and that private investigators finally uncovered the truth, and that they were worried about this. Critics usually overvalue particular items and ignore others. They tend to place more emphasis on recollection of individuals. And the line of attack, it says, and this is funny, is attack their eyewitnesses, which are less reliable, and rely upon the ballistics, the autopsy, and the photographic evidence, and the examination of the commission records will show the conflicting eyewitness accounts are out of context and were discarded by the Warren Commission for good and sufficient reasons. That's very entertaining, because the actual critics of the Warren Report, who've gotten out all these books, were critical of the ballistic evidence, of the autopsy evidence, of the photographic evidence. And the CIA was telling their agents to discredit the writers, the researchers, because they were relying on witness testimony and go back on the ballistics. And it's the ballistic and the autopsy and the photographic evidence which proves that it's a conspiracy. The CIA told their agents to fight the critics of the Warren Report on another tactic. It said conspiracies on the large scale often suggested would be impossible to conceal in the United States. When somebody says there was a conspiracy in the United States, you should answer that it's impossible to conceal a conspiracy in the United States. And certainly Robert Kennedy, the Attorney General, would be the last man to overlook one, or Congressman Gerald Ford would hardly hold his tongue, or Senator Russell would have every reason to expose these misdeeds. Well, Congressman Ford and Senator Russell, one working for the CIA, Ford for the CIA, and Russell, a watchdog on the CIA, had every reason to put down conspiracy theories, because they went to the CIA, which was their boss and their agent, and they were put on the Warren Commission to divert the evidence away from the CIA in the killing of John Kennedy. Now, the CIA sent a memo to their agents to go to editors and newspapers and, I guess, book publishers and so forth, and to put down the idea of conspiracy theories because you couldn't contain them. The very fact was that within 1 year, it wasn't contained, and the evidence was coming out, and the necessity for this kind of memo was that the case was falling apart. And it hasn't held together. If it's a large scale with no evidence, it would be ridiculous to be going 14 years, but the evidence was there. They also said that the critics of the Warren Report have often been enticed by a form of intellectual pride. They light on some theory and they fall in love with it, and they scoff at the Warren Commission because it didn't answer every question with a flat decision one way or the other. Actually, the makeup of the Warren Commission and its staff was an excellent safeguard against overcommitment to one theory or against the illicit transformation of probabilities into certainties. Now, the CIA is saying the critics had a form of intellectual pride. That's true. I've had an intellectual pride. I've had a pride in attacking these bastards. I've had a pride in exposing them. I've had a pride in showing where they falsified evidence, planted evidence, forged evidence. I think I have an intellectual pride over, say, Mr. Cronkite and Howard K. Smith and the major news media, Dan Rather, these people that have lied to you about this event, this political assassination of John Kennedy, and passed these stories off as Lee Harvey Oswald, the lone assassin, when the evidence went otherwise. I think you have to say that there's a little intellectual pride in, number one, being able to figure it out, and then, number two, exposing it. And there's certain people like Mr. Jostin or Buchanan, who wrote Who Killed Kennedy. Jostin wrote Oswald, Assassin or Fall Guy, or Mark Lane's Rush to Judgment, or Harold Weisberg's books, his series on whitewash, or Penn Jones' books, Forgive My Grief, 1, 2, 3, and 4, and Sylvia Marr's Accessory After the Facts, Josiah Thompson's Six Seconds in Dallas, or Richard Popcorn's Two Oswalds. Why wouldn't you have an intellectual pride? You take their evidence and their garbage. It's like taking the garbage and the throwaway from a high-class restaurant and producing a meal better than served inside. Why shouldn't you? And they knew that this is the one thing that the researchers had above them, was at least a pride in their work. if they said that the Warren Report would stand up for all time. And yes, 3 years ago, when I wanted to give a course at Monterey Peninsula College with Ray Fabrizio on the Kennedy assassination, we suggested that the students buy the Warren Report that was published in 1964. And that Warren Report is out of print. You have to buy old copies or used copies. They stopped publishing it because the researchers laid it so flat. Every sentence in it is a falsified piece of junk. And you can't even buy the Warren Report. And yet the books that have been out by the researchers in the past, and the ones that I hope to write in the future, just like my Watergate stories or the articles I did in The Realist or for Midnight or Playgirl, they'll stand for all time against all evidence that comes in. And I don't think anyone can challenge those facts. And yet the CIA had to have a method of psychological war against the researchers because they were desperate. Their attitude was falling apart. Their evidence was falling apart. They go on as a memorandum of attack in general. If you don't have a specific book to attack, say that Oswald would not have been any sensible person's choice for a conspirator because he was a loner. He was mixed up, questionable reliability, and unknown quantity. Yet people like Candy Jones, who was an extrovert who worked for the CIA since 1957, who liked blacks, who liked Jews and Italians, she was programmed and hypnotized and said, stay alone. The Jews eat garlic and they smell, the Italians smell, the blacks smell. You can't trust these people. She was programmed to hate. She was told to be alone. You read The Control of Candy Jones by the CIA in 57. She was told, don't see anybody, don't trust anybody. Break your old friends and stay alone. And that's why Lee Harvey Oswald and Arthur Brammer and Sirhan Suran and James Earl Ray were loners because the CIA hypnotized them and said they were alone. And then after the conspiracies, the CIA sends out a memorandum, psychological approach, because they were loners, they couldn't be part of a big conspiracy. They went on to say that the Warren Commission report was criticized as being a rush job. Actually, they were done 3 months after the deadline originally set, but the degree which they tried to speed it up was due to the pressure of irresponsible speculation that appeared, and they had to answer the critics. And then they went on, there are vague accusations that more than 10 people have died mysteriously in their in the years before this CIA report came out, and these 10 people died mysteriously. And you can go on and say there were 418 witnesses and 25,000 interviews. And from a large number group, a certain number of deaths are expected. When Penn Jones, one of the originators of the 10 mysterious death lines, appeared on television, it emerged that two of the deaths on his list were heart attacks, one cancer, one a head-on collision from a bridge, one when a driver drifted into a bridge abutment. So when people talk about the death of the witnesses, the CIA said, remind yourself the out of the law of averages, 25,000 interviews, and 418 witnesses, you can't expect some mysterious deaths. What Penn Jones was saying was that the man that saw Lee Harvey Oswald leave the back of the school book depository died quickly. The bus driver who was supposed to have taken him from that location died quickly. The taxi cab driver died right after that. Arlene Roberts, the rooming house lady, died after that. We have the Sheriff Craig, who saw Lee Harvey Oswald leave from the front of the building and not the back, was hounded and died just a year and a half ago. Sheriff Craig, they called it one of these suicides, and he died a miserable death after being haunted and followed. The CIA had a concerted effort and a plan to kill books that came out. They write about these books. They write about the book of Edward J. Epstein called Inquest and Mark Lane's book. They were very concerned, and they had methods of operation in this document to come down on these people. And they said even Life magazine printed an article 25 November 1966 in which Governor Connally repeated his belief he was not struck by the same bullet that struck President Kennedy, and even Life magazine reprinted the Zapruder films, I mean, as if that were a crime. And they go into these other books of William Manchester, who's writing a book, and the material is being purged personally, whatever is objectionable to Mrs. Kennedy. And then they said Jacob Cohn is writing a book in 1967 titled Honest Verdict, in which he will be coming out and defending the Warren Commission report. And Wesley Liebler is also writing a book, which never came out, and Cohn's book didn't come out. And it said, we have to silence these editorials. Even the Washington Post had a recent article of Jack Ruby's death that said it might lead to speculation that he was silenced as part of a conspiracy. And they went into the Gestapo files of Joe Josten from Germany. This man had been a victim of problems in Germany. He left there and then went back later, and he was the first person who published the accounts of H.L. Hunt involved in the Kennedy assassination and named the FBI and the CIA. So when the CIA wanted information about Joe Josten, they went to the Gestapo files, which the CIA still uses. They were nervous about Josten's book, Oswald Assassin or Fall Guy, Mark Lane's Rush to Judgment, Leo Savage, The Oswald Affair, and they were worried about Harold Weisberg's books. And they went on to say that Harold Weisberg had to publish his books privately, and that was important, that no major publisher would give any credence to his theory. And it said that Penn Jones Jr. published his books, and they're relatively slight, and these writers will appear to readers to be hysterical and paranoid. It went on that the people that read these books will be hysterical and paranoid. And I think it's important that this was written about the intellectual critics such as Epstein's book and Richard Popkin's book on the second Oswald. They said, because Oswald was reported to have been seen in different places at different times, a phenomenon not surprising in a sensational case where thousands of real or alleged witnesses were interviewed. Popkin theorizes there were two Oswalds. He may have gone on and said there were three, and they made fun of him. And the point is that the CIA was disseminating a psychological warfare to the publishers of books, the publishers of newspapers, letters to the editors. The book reviewers were to handle these books. They were to take the line of attack that we were out after money, we were running for political office, we hadn't studied the evidence. And they were very nervous because they themselves were named as part of the investigation of the assassination. And if anyone thought these witnesses were being killed, that was totally irresponsible. And there was no such thing as these conspiracies. I think that the plan of putting down the researchers is verified. It was verified in the Schweiker hearings of Mr. DeLoach of the FBI talking about the memos that went directly from the White House to the FBI to follow all individuals who were researching or writing books about the Warren Report. And my FBI files, incidentally, at the bottom of these files, they were be disseminated to Mr. DeLoach of the FBI, who was responsible for putting down these critics according to the Schweiker report. And William Sullivan of the FBI was interested in what Mae Brussel was doing in New Orleans. And William Sullivan's name has come up many times as being head of Division 5 of the FBI, which I said was linked to Permandex and the military-industrial complex. So what am I saying? I've said a lot today about the FBI and their surveillance on me. I've said that the CIA had a concerted effort to put down the researchers. I also have the minutes of the Schweiker Committee verifying that they were to follow and get these people, the researchers, in bed if possible, or doing other acts that they could discredit and smear them through their sexual habits or whatever. And they've been at this, my record, since 1966, other researchers since 66, and just because I wrote a letter to the editor for Mark Lane's book. Now, it's a long time later. I've been doing the work 14 years, and I've published quite a few articles. I've been on the air, starting my sixth year, and now I've made a movie, and I'll be going into three or four movies we're already talking about. So I think we're leaping over the FBI and the CIA and getting the truth to the American people. And those of you who've helped me, I thank you 1,000 times. We're going to get it out, and it's going to be all told, and we'll see it in our lifetime. I know we will.
There is a truth, I thought to myself,